The following is a quarantine recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so serious, like people stare curious, like she got a natural way, her hips sway furious, like yeah, the luxurious, like carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you've seen this side of the bay.
Hey, this is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-Black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do-what-you-like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head, what we're loving on, and what we hating on, what we might be and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, how half the Republican Party, including your president, has the fucking Rona, we cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and rebellion. It's a challenging time, a changing time. It's a time of transformation. It's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99. Because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed.
She just won't quit, flaunting it by the built like a house made out of brick. She got the smile, the style, and finesse, compounded with a blessed profound intellect.
Our guest this week made history this past July when she became the first Black woman to anchor a primetime cable news program, The Readout, on MSNBC. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Man Who Sold America, Trump and the Unraveling of the American Story, as well as Fracture, Barack Obama, the Clintons, and the Racial Divide. She also has podcasts, Read This, Read That, with veteran journalist Jackie Reed, and a book podcast called What to Read. She is everywhere, and now she's here. Please welcome my friend, Joy Ann Reed. Hi, Joy.
Hey, Alicia. How are you? Congrats on the podcast.
Oh, you know, thank you. Thank you. We're doing things over here.
Yes.
A little quarantine podcast that could. I'm so glad you're on the show. And I got to ask you, because I ask everybody, because, you know, the Rona is still real. Yeah. What has your quarantine life been like? And are you developing any unique habits live and direct from Miss Rona?
Well, first of all, you're in Oakland, California, the Grand Republic of California, which might be my new country if this don't go right in November.
You know what I'm saying?
I might be moving when y'all secede from the Union. Don't
we'll
leave without
you.
Me. Don't
we'll
you
take
leave
you.
Me here.
We'll take you. But don't worry. We ain't going to leave.
Well, so, you know, I'm in the DMV area. My husband and I bought a home in 2018, really thinking, you know, we're going to have a nice place, you know, to go with our family for Christmas. Because, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I'm from Brooklyn.
You know.
I was like, never going to leave New York. And we were renting in Harlem. You know, we had all our kids still living with us, trying to get out and be on their own. And we were coming back and forth between DC, the DC area, and New York. And just that was going to be my life. I was just going to go back and forth.
Yep.
And then the Rona hit hard.
Hard.
And on April 14th, the day before tax day, we got in our car and drove down and have not looked back. I've been down here, right? We got all of our kids. It took a while to convince the third one because he's a little Mr. Independent.
Okay.
He stayed up there by himself for like a month. And finally he was like, Mom, I got to get out of here. So we've all been down here. And my Rona life has pretty much been, I'm in my house all the time. Jackie Reed, my play cousin and co-host on Read This, Read That. When she told me about Instacart, that was the end of me leaving my house.
Oh, it's life.
It's life. I don't leave my house. If I don't have to work, or go up to New York to do, you know, one of the, you know, debates and the stuff that I've been doing with Nicole and Rachel, that's the only time I leave. I'm just in my house. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I'm an early adopter of this Instacart now. People thought I was crazy, but I was like, look, I got too much to do than to be messing around with y'all in the grocery store in these long ass lines, listening to my conversations. Cause you know, I walk and talk. I got things to do. But child, let them groceries get delivered to the door.
And they leave it right outside. They're lovely. You can like give them a little rating if they got the right peanut butter.
That's
they
right.
get the right one you wanted? I mean,
that's right.
I am obsessed with Instacart. You can pick whichever store you want. So I'm loving. And the thing is, you know, even though my name is Joy and I'm very gregarious in a way, I actually am fine with being alone.
Me too.
And I enjoy solitude. I love to read. You know, I'm doing a books podcast. I have to like read a book a week.
Yes.
And I love the solitude. We're out here in the country-ish sort of area where it's just woodsy and quiet.
Yep.
And I'm actually fine with it. The only thing that's really troubling to me in this sort of Rona lifestyle is the actual tragedy, you know, mm-hmm. is talking about it and living it and reporting on it and being terrified for all of my friends who are still in Florida, you know, in South Florida particularly, and my friends in New York, and just thinking about, you know, I have friends that have had coronavirus and that thank God survived it. And I have also friends who didn't. My friend Larry, who was my guy, this was oh. my sound guy. We covered the Trayvon Martin case together. We traveled through all Florida together. Like, this was my guy, you know, mm. and he passed. He was the first person I knew who passed from coronavirus. So every day is like depressing. And then you see how low our country has gone and how far we've fallen. It's depressing, you know? So I'm thankful and I'm very, very blessed that I have all of my family with me. My husband, my kids are here. They're safe. They're alive.
Mm. Well, shout out to Larry. May he rest in peace. And Lord, let's do what we got to do so that nobody else is dying from this completely preventable plague. I just got to ask people, because, you know, back in the day, I'm old enough to remember.
You're a youngin. You a youngin still. You're still younger.
I'm old enough
I'm
to remember.
I'm your old auntie. I'm the auntie in this conversation. Let's just be real about that.
And my favorite one. So I'm old enough to remember when we were baking bread. We were all in it together. We were planting gardens.
Yes. Yes.
We were getting like some, finding some real pleasures in this very, very odd moment. So I got to ask you, are there any new pleasures besides Instacart that Miss Rona has given you?
Well, I mean, I spend a lot of time, you know, I'm Generation X. So our generation were raised by the TV because all mm-hmm. our mamas had two jobs, right? So they didn't get home until 10 o'clock at night. You had to make your own dinner. Like if you had peanut butter sandwich for dinner, that's just what you had. You know what I mean? Thank God my mother taught us how to cook.
Okay.
But, you know, so I'm a TV child. So I spend a lot of time watching TV. And so I spend a lot of time watching, like I'm right now on season 2 of Fargo, because I want to watch the Chris Rock season, but I want to be prepared by watching all the previous ones. So I love to binge watch. I love to find a show that everybody else was into before I was into and then just binge watch the hell out of it. So I love doing that. I am watching Lovecraft Country, even though some weeks it's traumatizing for
yes,
me, honestly,
yes,
a little bit. But you know, I love to watch TV. So it, you know, other than books and doing work, I spend a lot of time just chilling and watching that telly.
Oh, this makes me so happy. Okay, we're going to have to exchange TV recs because, you know,
yes.
I'm a TV girl too. I was raised on MTV, child. So, you know, I'm obsessed with all the things.
But were you MTV when they had music videos or when they had shows? Because, right, so music video MTV was just the better MTV. Let's
absolutely.
Just be real.
And I'm MTV News.
Yes.
You know,
I
Kurt Loder.
It.
You know what I'm
yes.
saying?
Like, yes. Why did they take that off? That was like the best era of MTV. It truly was.
Well, it was really good. And it actually politicized me in a whole bunch of ways. This is how I figured out everything about what was happening with apartheid. And, you know,
yes.
I remember the Ryan White whole thing with the HIV and AIDS crisis. Like, this is how I learned about all this stuff, because this was kind of pre the widespread of the internet.
Yeah,
I had encyclopedias at this time.
I did too. My mom ordered the set, the whole set that was blue. It was a blue Encyclopedia Britannica, and that got my homework done. Like, we didn't have the internet when I was growing up. We had to do our actual homework. Like, we didn't have Wikipedia. Okay, we had to just look that shit up. Look that shit up on paper.
Exactly. I have loved you for such a long time. And without fail, seeing you behind the anchor desk each evening, like, it makes me tear up with joy. No pun intended. I get really sappy about this. So
I just got to know.
It's really a big deal. And when I saw you at the debates last week, I was like, I was tearing up and I couldn't tell. I was like, wait, this is for joy. This isn't about the state of the country. This is actually... How amazing and wonderful is it to see a Black woman on this stage? So we're going to come around to this.
Thank you.
I got to know the real, though, Joy. How did you decide that you wanted to become a journalist? Because I read somewhere that this is not actually where you started.
At all. No, I'm, you know, my mother was from Guyana. My father was African, but I was raised by a single mom. And, you know, she's Guyanese. And so like all Caribbean people, you know, they want their children, especially as an immigrant. You know, she came here in 1960. You know, she had big dreams for her kids. She did it. She eventually got her PhD. She was very into education and it was very important to her. But, you know, at 12 years old, I made the mistake of saying, you know, I think I would like to be a doctor. And that was a wrap. But I got to be a doctor. I'm going to have a doctor in the family. I'm so proud. A doctor in the family. I have the doctor. You know, that's it. You can't change your mind, right? And my sister said she was going to be a lawyer. I said I was going to be a doctor. And my baby brother was going to be an architect. That's it. Game over. There was no plan B. So I was rolling with that, even though I was very much a news junkie. I was, you know, always sort of into the news. I got into the news in the sixth grade, actually. The same year I messed myself up by saying that I was going to be a doctor. And I was just, I remember just passing by the TV and my mom was watching, it was this countdown show about the Iran hostage crisis, just to age myself. And I was just fascinated by it. I could not get enough of it. I just was so fascinated about the idea that, you know, these people had swept in, took all these Americans hostage. And there was this countdown every night Ted Koppel was doing. And I asked my mom, can I watch it? And she's like, sure, sit up and watch it. And I watched that show every night all the way through high school.
Wow.
I would watch the Today Show. I would watch the Sunday shows. I would watch Meet the Press. Like I was just obsessed with politics. And so was my mom. My mom was as soon as she got her citizenship, she was finally able to vote. Her first vote was in 1976 for Jimmy Carter.
Wow.
And she was a big Carter girl. And my father was a very conservative, very Reagan guy, you know, so in 80, he was real happy when Reagan won. And we all cried. Me, my sister, my brother were all crying. And he was like, you Americans don't understand. Politics is much complicated. You have to vote for the man who loves the business. I love business. Like he was, I was like, whatever, you're an idiot. You don't even live here. Just get out, you know. But I mean, that was my family. So I was in a very political family. We would go with my mom when she would vote. Like it was all about politics. So even though that wasn't my original dream, I did say I was going to be a doctor. So long story short, that dream pretty much lasted until I graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. My mom passed away the September after I graduated from high school. I had already gotten into Harvard as a pre-med, but I was just shattered. My mother was my bestest friend. I loved her so much. We were so close.
Yeah.
And I just no longer had the motivation to go into medicine. I couldn't even walk into a hospital without hyperventilating. So I was like, how am I going to be a doctor? I'm going to be more broken up than my patients. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be able to do this. So I started failing through school. I failed through my freshman year at Harvard. I was miserable. You know, I spent more time with my sister. She was at Brown. I would just go up there and just spend all my time there. So I wasn't even making friends. I was just really isolated and miserable. And Harvard was just not the right place for me. It was not a warm environment. They would give you the suicide hotline and the Facebook. That's what you got. Like the original Facebook was just a picture of everybody's names and faces. That's where they stole the idea from, by the way.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
So anywho, I'm like, I can't do this. So after, a year of basically barely making it through and almost failing out and ending up academic probation, I took a year off. I moved back to Brooklyn with my auntie, my mom's little sister. And I just had to figure out what the hell was I going to do with my life. So I took a lot of different jobs. I actually worked at Columbia Pictures for a while as a temp. Right down the street from Trump Tower. So I saw Trump Tower in the 80s and it was already tacky. I'm just going to say, because it was down the street. And I was like, let me walk in and see it. It was mad tacky. It was like, everything was gold. I was like, why is all this gold?
No, that man ain't got no taste. On top of everything else, he ain't got no taste.
It was tacky. I was like, that's Trump Tower? Damn. So long story short, when I went back to school, I had been really doing a lot of film related stuff. And eventually I moved out of my aunt's because she had real strict rules. We had to go to church 4 days a week. And I was like, I'm Methodist. I couldn't do 4 days a week. It was too much church. So I ended up moving into Fort Greene and I got a little apartment down the street from Spike Lee, from Spike's joint. And everywhere there was like activity going on and movie stuff going on and activity. It was just like so creative, you know, in that neighborhood that I went back and switched to be a film major. Mm-hmm. And when I got out of college, I needed to figure out what I was going to do with that. I'm a film major. I met a little crew. I met my husband and we were just friends at the time. We did a little show called Video Dub Plate. It was like a little reggae music TV show.
Yes.
And, you know, we were doing creative stuff. And so I was like, maybe I'll be a creative. And I took a day job just being, working in some corporation, being like a marketing analyst at a beverage thing. And I did what I'm supposed to do, Harvard wise. But then when I got pregnant and then got pregnant a second time, we needed to figure out our lives. We moved to Florida. I applied for a job at the local Fox affiliate, WSVN, and I got hired. And I became a morning show news writer. And I had always loved news. So I was like, I'll just do something I enjoy. And I did that until the Iraq War. Rolling along, I had to get another job. I ended up doing talk radio. Long story short, Obama runs. And when he runs, some of my friends from the 04 campaign were working on his campaign. They were like, we need you. Can you come and work? I worked. We won. And suddenly, I'm a pundit. Because when you win in an election and you worked in any capacity, I was very low level on the press staff. But it doesn't matter. Like, we won and we won Florida. So it's like, yeah, you should be a pundit. You know, so everybody started bringing me on TV.
This makes me so happy. Look. The world is crazy right now, and America, top of the crazy scale. I read in the news this week that the University of Iowa is going to be one of the first universities like in the nation to end diversity and inclusion instruction as per federal mandate from this president. I mean, what is going on? And is this true to form, or do you think this is going to be an anomaly? I mean, what do you think this says about the future of this nation under this president, but also in your profession, right? Part of how we get to having Black women on primetime television, right, is this long process of trying to shift not only people's minds and hearts, but policy how we hire, who we hire, and why. So give me the scoop. Make it make sense, Joy. Lord.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, Dr. King would always say, you know, it doesn't matter. I can't make a racist sheriff love me. I can't change his heart. I can change the sheriff. That's why we vote. Not because we want to change racist people's hearts and minds. We want to change them out of power. As long as they're not in power, they have the freedom to think whatever they want. You hate black people. I don't personally don't care.
We don't care.
That's your loss. You losing out on the culture, because guess who makes the culture?
Exactly. Hot.
Like, you want seasoning in your food? Okay. You need some black people and some browns. We put a certain type of seasoning. If you don't want
that,
you can just have the spaghetti plain. That's fine.
Correct.
But I am worried that Donald Trump didn't create anything. He didn't create, you know, the racism and the hatred and the neo-Nazism and all of that. He just inherited it and enhanced it. And he just, you know what I mean? He just made it bigger and more vibrant because he opened it up. What happened from the 60s on is that whatever people's racist proclivities and anger at increasing diversity and anger at, you know, gay folks becoming visible and black folks being in their jobs and living in their neighborhoods, whatever anger people had was sort of tamped down by this thing called political correctness, where you're not supposed to say it publicly. You can get in trouble. You can lose your job. You can think it at home, but just don't think it in public. What Donald Trump said is, nah, think it in public. Feel it, love it, live it, and embrace it.
That's right.
And that's what he's done. And so I think people who had, you know, in Florida, when Jeb Bush was governor, there were a lot of attempts by the Jeb Bush administration to roll back a lot of what universities were trying to do to create more inclusion for Black and brown folks. Mm-hmm. That's Jeb Bush. Mm-hmm. He's a regular order Republican. It's a Republican thing they've been doing and that Democrats used to do.
That's right.
So I just fear that Trump, you know, he sent out that memo that basically said, you can't even teach about, you know, intersectionality in any public agency.
Right.
That to him is a bad word.
He don't even know how to spell intersectionality. You know what I'm saying?
It's true. Yeah, he's not an intellectual giant. We'll put it that way. But I mean, I fear that people who are smarter than he is and who have in their hearts a notion to roll back the progress that we have made, that people who look like us have made, and that a lot of people who are angry about that, he's given them the excuse to just lean in and do it.
Mm-hmm. That's facts. I mean, and another way to look at it too, right, is look how we're winning. I mean, really, they are trying to come after everything that we have been pushing and lifting and amplifying over these last years. And frankly, if you're governing to try and control the change that we have been instituting in this country, well, then, child, that's up to you, because there's bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. Listen, the biggest change that we have seen in this country, and I've been covering Black Lives Matter since Trayvon, and people always forget he was the start of it, and he wasn't killed by a cop. He was killed by a wannabe cop.
That's right.
And, you know, you ladies, you and I say you ladies because it was ladies who created it. Let's just not twist
That's right.
This was a woman, a Black woman created idea that took the civil rights movement and modernized it. It is John Lewis in the modern era. It's the things he was saying built for this era and for social media and using social media in a brilliant way. And, you know, I want to praise you for that because this movement is what is terrifying Donald Trump and his followers. Why is it terrifying them? Because when I was first covering it, the president was Black. And most white Americans deeply opposed Black Lives Matter. You remember the fight y'all got.
Yes, and the
hate that y'all got. Now, Black Lives Matter includes a lot of white suburban women's children who are marching. It wasn't Black people marching in Seattle. Ain't hardly any Black people out there.
Listen, facts.
It's not Black people in Portland. Not a lot of Blacks. 6% Black. And so all over the country, the thing that's new now is that white people's children and some white people, adult, grown, you know, older people, senior citizens, they're marching for Black Lives Matter. They see what happened to Breonna Taylor as an outrage. They saw George Floyd and were shaken, just like we always are shaken. We, you know, we've been shaken for hundreds of years. Now they are too. And so I think what Donald Trump fears is the success of things like Black Lives Matter. These movements can't be stopped. There's nothing he can do to stop it.
That's right. Because it's global. You can't control the global movement. So, you know, yeah, let's just remember that. I'm going to let that take me through the week, that Donald Trump goes to sleep at night thinking about Black Lives Matter. You know what I'm saying? I'll be going to sleep at night thinking about how I can defeat Donald Trump, but he goes to sleep at night thinking about BLM. So that makes me happy in my soul.
Y'all are sharing space in his head with Barack Obama. Because, you know, Barack Obama lives in like a third of his. He just rents a whole apartment.
That's facts. I'm getting tax breaks in Donald Trump's head. That makes me very happy. Alice Walker, Nikki Giovanni. We are in full swing in this election season. And you know what? It's been a complete disaster. It's been a shit show. How are we to understand this next 30 days? What's at stake? And we're talking all about voters and who's going to come and who's not going to come and who's staying home and who's getting, you know, activated. But I want to ask a different question, which is, what is critical right now to the outcome of the election? People know at this point, you're going to vote or you're not going to vote. And if you're going to vote, you know who you're going to vote for. I don't believe that anybody is like, I just can't decide. Is it Biden or no, you know what you know. You're trying to decide right now if you're going to show up or not. So
that's right.
What's at stake here? I mean, I think we're going into this period where we're also starting to make contingency plans, right? I mean, this man has already said he don't believe in ballots. He don't believe in voting. Remember, he thinks the earth is flat. So what are we working with here?
Yeah.
Any predictions?
Sure. I predict in every race, and I am sometimes right and I'm sometimes wrong. I will note that I did predict that Barack Obama would choose Joe Biden, and I said he was the only choice he could have made. So I was right about that. I did believe that in 2004, I did think we were going to beat George W. Bush. I was very much wrong.
So we kind of did, but technically we did.
I did believe that Barack Obama was going to win. I was never the least bit unconfident that he would win both of those two elections. And this is the Black guy. And who was running with him and who already won North Carolina and Indiana with him? That would be Joe Biden. So these people have already voted for Joe Biden, right? So I'm fine with predicting. I did think Hillary Clinton was going to win in 2016. So I'm about 50-50 in my predictions, but I will make one at the end. So what I will say is very important is I'll do three things. Number one, stop using the term election day. Don't think about election day. That's gone. Because of early voting and absentee, it's an election season and we're already deep in it. More than 3.5 million votes as of when we're recording this, Alicia, have already been cast.
Wow.
Many of them by mail, but many of them in person. Today, on the day we're recording this, lines around the corner in Ohio. People are voting in record numbers. This will probably be the largest turnout election in modern American history, probably even more than the next largest, which was Obama in 2008. This is going to be huge. for America, unfortunately, huge means maybe 62, 63, 65%, because we're at the bottom in terms of the West, that's in terms right. of our voter turnout. If we get to 70%, it'll be a miracle, but it could happen because that's how interested people are. The stakes could not be higher. If Donald Trump remains president of the United States, and again, this is not me saying this as a partisan, I'm just saying it as somebody who has observed mm-hmm. this country and observed politics and observed other countries for a long time, will you become closer to being Brazil? We become closer to being Turkey. Mm. We become closer to being Poland, all of whom have receded from being democracies. We will be less of a democracy 4 years from now than we are now. The rights of citizens, particularly Black, Brown, and Indigenous citizens and Asian American citizens and immigrants will be diminished. Stephen Miller will still have power to write our laws when it comes to Black and Brown people and immigrants. LGBT people will have fewer rights than they started with. Mm-hmm. The trans community will probably be the first ones to get hurt. Mm-hmm. You're going to see conservative Christians protected by the law in ways that they have not been in the past, which for them, it would be a victory. But women will lose considerable rights, including potentially the right to choose whether you give birth. Mm-hmm. A lot is at stake. This is whether or not we stay a democracy. The founders of this country, I was speaking with someone this morning who's also white, by the way, and mm-hmm. so agreed with me 100%, that the founders, we have to remember, were not perfect. They were slave-owning white men who created a democracy perfect for them, but terrible for their wives, their daughters, enslaved people, Native Americans, and everyone else. It took 27 amendments just to make it decent. Mm. And what it never happened in 27 amendments is we never restrained the president. And so whenever we have a president who is an autocrat, that autocrat can actually get away with a lot more than we ever thought. Technically, FDR was president for life. It is possible to do a lot in this country that we think of as what is done in other countries. So that's what's at stake. We must vote. If we want the ability to ever vote again, if we want to ever have a free and fair election ever again, we have to make this one a free and fair election, or we are doomed, quite frankly. And I don't mean to be alarmist, but I am alarmed. Mm-hmm. Our democracy is super fragile. Just remember, Poland emerged from World War II as a democracy and is sliding back out of democracy. Brazil is sliding out of democracy. China has a president for life. Russia has a president for life. All of these supposedly are democracies. So I would say to everyone, please vote however you feel comfortable. Mail it, but just mail it early. Drop off your absentee ballot that you filled out so you can get in and out quick. Wear your PPE, vote in person. However you have to do it no matter what. Mm. And make sure everyone you know, love, even people you hate and you only talk to them once a year, make them vote.
That's right.
And the last thing I'll say is remember the important date is not November 8th. It is December 13th. December 13th is the day that the electors meet. December 8th, my birthday, is the day, the deadline for states to decide who the electors are going to be. In every state that is a swing state, 16 of them, most of them have Republican state legislatures, even if they have Democratic governors. In some cases, Democratic governors and Democratic secretaries of state, which means this election can be stolen. But the only way to stop them is to make the vote so overwhelming that they can't try it and they wouldn't dare. If there was ever going to be an election that Republicans would have stolen, it would have been in 08 when the Black guy was running. They couldn't because he won by 10 million votes. They wanted to 4 years later. They couldn't because he won by 5 million votes with almost no support from white American voters. You can win with just 4 out of 10 white voters and 8 out of 10 non-white voters. That's all Biden needs. We've got to vote. We can get him. We can get him out. Mm. We can't count on Congress or Nancy Pelosi to pull some magic trick. Don't wait for January 6th when they have to actually do the vote and send the electors over. Don't wait for that. December 13th. And if you're in Pennsylvania listening to Alicia's podcast, your vote kicks in on December 1st, because that's when their state legislature is chosen. If you vote out that Republican majority in the state legislature, they can't steal the election because they'll be unemployed. So bottom line, the best cure for people who hate democracy is unemployment.
Okay. You know what? That was actually the best rundown we have gotten in 28 episodes of this podcast. And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Number one, super spreader in chief.
That's right. Your president and literally all his homies have the Rona. Literally all of them. Kellyanne Conway, Kayleigh McEnany, the Naranjo Nazi, Chris Christie, and like 10 other people too. I'd be willing to bet Mike Pence has it too, but to say so would send financial markets bananas. Too many people out here talking about, it's a conspiracy, he's just saying he has the Rona. Nah, blood. This heffa Trump got the Rona. There's no doubt about it. Also no doubt about this. Because he thinks the shit is a hoax, he ain't gonna do much about it. In fact, word out on the street is that he's going to continue to have super spreader events on the White House lawn because stupid is as stupid does. And your president sure is stupid. That's a fact. He's high on steroids and treatments made with fetal tissue. Your anti-abortion president is using fetal tissue to recover from the Rona. Imagine that. Speaking of cowards and hypocrites, the presidential debates have been canceled for next week. Why, you ask? Because punk-ass Donald Trump refuses to take a COVID test. And because the rules of the debates say that you have to take a fucking COVID test. Donald Trump, alas, will not be debating anybody. But you know what? Good. I didn't want to see that orange devil on my television, no way. And you bet your ass he's going to say some bullshit about free choice or whatever, but let me make it plain for you. He's a coward. And after the last debacle, here's my hunch. Either A, his bitch ass still has the Rona and there ain't enough steroids to last him into next week, or B, his campaign wants to keep his punk ass off television and keep him from making a complete ass of himself and of them. Well, here's a newsflash. It's too late for all that shit. Your president, the super spreader in chief, the Naranjo Nazi, got the Rona that he swore didn't even exist. And no amount of avoiding the debates is going to change anything about that. Lindsey Graham's punk ass is doing the same thing, which is probably a good thing because Jamie Harrison mopped the floor with his ass in the last debate. What you can take from this? These people really ain't shit. They're cowards. And even more than that, they're contagious cowards. And lady don't want nothing they're selling, saying, spreading. Lady don't fuck around with Miss Rona now, child. But Miss Rona, go on and handle your business, sis. They don't take you seriously, but I do. So do what you gotta do, sis. We tried to tell him, but a hard head makes a soft behind, as my mama would say. Moving on. Here's what Lady wants more of this week. Okay, so y'all know I cannot get enough of Lovecraft Country. And this week's episode was chef's kiss amazing. Y'all, I mean, what are we doing with these little tethered twins and the cream of wheat man and the eyes and the funeral of Emmett Till and the inability to kill Miss Letty is everything. I need Miss Hippolyta to come on back now, child, because they can't fight these demons without her. We only have 2 episodes left, and I'm not ready for this show to end. I need, like, 8 seasons of this show. I mean, what? Y'all gave Game of Thrones 8 seasons or whatever, and it was just whatever. And then they played y'all on the finale. If Game of Thrones can get 8 seasons, child, Lovecraft Country deserves 8 seasons. Argue with your mama. Next thing Lady loves this week, Late Summers. I mean, this week it has been a cool 75 degrees and sunny, and the air has been clear. Now look, I love me a Bay Area late summer, right before the air gets that chill in it. The sun is setting earlier, which Lady don't like, but I'll take a 75 degree day with clean air any day of the week. Other things Lady loves this week, y'all, Peloton. Okay, so I've been a believer since March when the pandemic first hit. I got mine before the crowds with a cool little deal, and it's honestly what's keeping me alive these days. 45 minutes, 4 times a week keeps the blues away and really helps with that pandemic anxiety thing. It ain't cheap, but neither is that gym membership I don't ever use, even before the pandemic. I do miss a treadmill and taking a good run, but the bike is doing it for me. Also, my top 3 instructors, okay, the ones I love, no particular order. I love Miss Hannah because she's great and she's hilarious. I love me some Allie Love. Got to just, And then also, don't judge me, but I love me some Cody Rigsby. Okay. Ain't no shame in my Peloton game. Anywho,
Next thing Lady loves this week, and this is a doozy, and it's also the reason this episode is late this week, my eyesight. So this week, Lady had a whole ass weird thing happen with my eye. It started off as me feeling like there was something in my eye, then it not going away, then an eye flushing, then an emergency room visit during fucking COVID, y'all, which I do not recommend, and then a 20-minute eye flush, and then me waking up with both eyes swollen shut and blurred and double vision for a full 24 hours. I mean, I'm better now, but y'all, I'm too vain for shit like this. The eye is one of the fastest healing organs in the body, but honestly, it all comes down to this. Take nothing for granted. Nothing. We acted a fool this week, but I don't care. That's what we do. So, Joy, Lord, tell the people. Thank you, first of all. Thank you for being on the pod today. Tell the people where they can follow you on the socials and where they can get into the projects that you're working on.
Well, thank you, Alicia. I'm so proud of you, for all that you are doing. I'm excited about the podcast. I'm going to subscribe and I will give you a 5-star rating.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Appreciate you.
And so, yes. And so I make it real easy. I'm Joy Ann Reed on Twitter. I'm Joy Ann Reed on Instagram. I'm the official Joy Reed on Facebook, if you're still using that crazy platform. Yes. And everything can be found usually there. And, you know, I keep all my books listed. I do have a website, which is joyannreed.com, where you can just find everything and all my podcasts.
Amazing. Joy, love you, love you, love you.
Thank you. Love you, girl.
That's it for Lady Don't Take No, but I'll be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where you used to have a commute. We appreciate you joining us, and let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what's on your mind, tell us what you like, and tell us what you just ain't gonna take no more of. On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. We're also on Facebook at Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about the things you hear on this show all over our social media. So if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. Please subscribe and write us a review and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our incredible theme is by Latyrix. And this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, don't take nothing the super spreader is selling, and don't let his cowardice be contagious. Vote like your ability to vote depends on it, because it does. And move your body for at least 30 minutes a day to keep those pandemic anxieties away. That's right, I said it, because Lady Don't Take No.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a woman is. She won't speak unless it's something worse, singing don't play. The girl take herself so serious, people stare curious. Got a natural way, her hips sway furiously. Yeah, the luxurious. Carries herself like the cutest most.
Love y'all.